Patty, as you're coming in, let us know where you're coming in from. It's so great to see you all. I'm going to open my chat here and look at all these wonderful parents. This is fantastic. All right, we've got people from, in case we're going to mute everybody, if you want to mute everyone, I could be quiet for a minute and then I can unmute and keep talking. Okay. Chester, New York, that's where I'm from. Okay, Winnipeg, Los Angeles, Bay Area, Tallahassee, Seattle, Denver, UK, all right, Virginia, fantastic. New Jersey, Portland, all over the place, Minnesota, San Diego, fantastic. Well, we are so happy that you guys are here for Friendship Week. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long, long time, because we've had social struggles in our family. It is not easy when you're bright and quirky, and uniquely wired to find your people. And today we wanted to lay the foundation of some key concepts for you. And I want to begin by introducing my friend and colleague, Caroline McGuire. Caroline, do you want to say hi just so people can see you?
Hi, everybody. I'm Caroline. It's so exciting to take this journey with you this week.
All right, fantastic. And you guys, I interviewed Caroline in the last year, and like my whole nervous system lit up in the best possible way because I thought, oh my gosh. These are the tools I've been looking for. And I pretty much got in touch with her immediately after our first interview and said, do you want to do like a really in-depth thing and peel the onion on this topic of social struggles and tools to help kids be socially successful? And she's like, let's go for it. So I was so happy about that. And Caroline has worked with one of the experts that we've worked with a lot here in Writing Quirky, which is Ned Halliwell, who wrote Driven to Distraction. She was a coach at the Halliwell Centers for many years. And now she has her own program helping people with ADHD and other quirkiness make friends and find belonging and thrive with their uniquely wired brains. So, Caroline, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. This is so exciting because I think that every parent could use a little help, and we get to do that this week.
Okay, fantastic. Fantastic. All right. And parents, we're so glad you're here. And I was reading a book last year called The Good Life, which rocked my world. And it had the results of the 85-year-long Harvard study of adult development. This is a fascinating study I had been following for years. Thousands of people starting, at the beginning of the last century, and they wanted to know what leads to healthy adult development. Is it family relationships? Is it income? Is it nutrition? Is it education? You would not believe how much research these researchers have done. They were looking at journal entries, conversations. It's crazy. When the number one thing that leads to healthy long-term development with positive relationships, which blows my mind. So we talk about the importance of exercise and sleep and nutrition and a good education. Right up there on that list should be positive relationships. And if you're listening, you don't have a lot of positive relationships in your life right now, that's okay. That's exactly what we're working on this week. And we're going to share lots of tools. And I love that I'm seeing parents and kids. That's so cool. And the other thing, the reason we're doing this is because of the Surgeon General talking about our current mental health epidemic and how loneliness is at the root. So we've got two really important cultural things going on in our society, especially being post-pandemic. And this topic's really, really important. So, Caroline, I'm not sure if you want to add to that or share with us the social struggles that have been closest to home for you and your big why on why you focus on this.
Well, my big why was that I was bullied as a kid and I didn't really have friends until late middle school. And when I was first a coach for ADHD, working more on academics with kids, I very quickly realized that this was a big gap and that no one was talking about it. And that is when a little boy, in fact, asked me, why will no one play with me? And it started me on this journey. And so my big why is everything Debbie said, and then that personally, I know what it is like to go to school each day and have no one to sit with. And it's my mission to make sure every child finds a friend who is bright and quirky.
Yes. And, there's something called post-traumatic growth when something not very good happens to you and then you actually grow in positive ways from it. And I think, Caroline, you're such a shining example of taking those difficulties in your life, figuring them out, and paying it forward to all of the other people in the world who struggle with that. So thank you. Thank you a
Thank
million
you.
times. So grateful for you and your work. And similarly for me, I had one of my kids really struggle socially, and I'll never forget going to middle school to volunteer, and he was sitting alone at lunch and struggled to find his people. And it wasn't until he pursued one of his interests, which was music, and got into club, well, it was school band, and everything changed, and he found his people. So, real quick, the way this week is going to go is today we're laying the foundation. Tomorrow, we're going to share the first part of Caroline's toolkit. On Wednesday, I'm going to be sharing how to make friends through strengths and interests and how to identify your child's strengths and interests. And for all you kids here, you can identify your own strengths and interests. And we're going to be taking questions at the end, by the way. And feel free to contribute in the chat as we go here too. And on Thursday, we're going to do the second part of the toolkit. And Friday, we're going to focus on putting everything into action. And just so you guys know, I run an organization called Bright and Quirky. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. For those of you who don't know, my name's Debbie Steinberg-Kuntz. And we support parents in something called the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab. It's I'll talk more about it later, but what we're doing this week is a sample of that with experts like Caroline who do deep dives on topics like this. All right, Caroline, let's dive in. So you use a phrase in your book that I know is near and dear to the hearts of many of our Bright and Quirky families. If your child could, they would. Can you unpack that for us?
Absolutely. So children want to please adults. They want to live up to societal expectations. And I think it's really easy to get caught in the can't versus won't cycle. So I don't do that. I believe if children could do it, they would do it. And that they have lagging skills. These are skills that are due to maturity, due to neurology. A little behind. And, some people make friends easily, and some people need more coaching and direct instruction. And it just depends on how your brain works. So I always say if they could do it, they would do it.
So important, so important. Guys, I forgot to mention we have a workbook to follow along with. Casey's going to put it in the chat. And the talks are for the whole family. We're going to make sure they're family friendly. And if you want to find the workbook for yourself, the link is here. For people listening to the replay, you can go to hub.brightandquirky.com/friendship-week and find the workbook there and download it. Okay, so how do we even know, Caroline, if we have a social problem or puzzle? I think what might be a little confusing for parents and even kids is feeling like, well, I don't really feel the need for friends, or I play with people online, whether I know them or not. Like I play video games with them. How do we know if we have a real social problem or puzzle to solve?
Well, here's the one thing. I am not against online friendships. I have many myself, and a lot of the kids and teens I work with have many. But those people don't help you move. They don't give you a hug. And we know that the levels of oxytocin, the love hormone, is much lower from online friendships. So one of the other things is a lot of kids I work with, we start with online friendships if that's where they're comfortable, and then I help them bridge to in-person friendships. How you know there's a social dilemma is a couple things. Here's a couple of my litmus tests. One, can you make friends with new people? So if your class shifts, I mean, if I were queen, everybody would get to have people in their class, in their classes in high school, who they were friends with and who they feel comfortable with. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. So if I put you in a situation where it's not that one person, can you make new friends? And then one of my other things is, do, especially with teenagers, do you see them outside of school? One of the really important things for teen life is having those hangouts. And I think everyone can find a friend, but if your child can't easily make friends and you are doing a lot of the orchestration for them, that's another thing for me, because I'm not going to college with you. I'm not going to your job with you, right? Eventually, I'm sending you out in the world. And what I want for our kids is I want you all to be empowered. I want you to have everything you need and also know how to get help. So those are some of my litmus tests of, like, is there a dilemma? Also, now I would also add, since the pandemic, spiraling anxiety over friendship. I want the kids to get help for that anxiety, professional help, but also that level of anxiety where maybe we are cajoling and listening every day and helping constantly. That probably means this is really hard for them and that they need a little help.
Yeah, and I think another thing that changed during the pandemic is people are talking about social atrophy, that, can you make a new friend? Do you see them outside of the school? And I don't know about other people, but I have one child who's really into video gaming, and his friend group wasn't, after the pandemic, wasn't making a huge effort to meet each other in real life and off of video games. So sometimes they need a little nudge or a little encouragement to actually meet in real life.
Absolutely. And that's why I say I'm not against the online friends. I'm not against the video games, because I know that that can be part of the life. And if kids are really, never seeing each other in real life, and they say, oh, it's only because you don't understand, I ask them about it. What's it like? And I ask them why they like that world. And what they usually tell me is it's very easy to read the social cues and it's very easy to find your way. So that tells me a lot. That tells me that in real life is not as easy to find your way. And so I want to embrace that. I want to learn from their experience in the online community. I don't shut it down, but we look at having a little more balance.
Yeah, it's a both and. Okay. In your book, you say the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves shape our behavior. And this is similar to narrative therapy that we might do in therapy. Why is it so important to know our kids' stories and our own, and how do we shape them?
It's so important. Think about when you go to do anything. If the story in your head is, and these are real stories kids tell me, I'm too much and people tolerate me, basically. Ouch, right? If people are saying it just doesn't work out for me, right? These things just don't work out for me. Then the first thing I want to say is you're going into every social interaction feeling less than. And This self-talk, this story we tell ourselves can be so powerful that then we end up people-pleasing, we end up tolerating stuff and not having healthy relationships because we feel like we have to just take whatever we can get. The other one I want to mention is also when kids tell me that the story for them is more about, smart kids don't have friends. And that's just the way it is. And then they quote a bunch of like famous people, and they tell me things like that. These are all things that I think are because it's hard, and we develop these stories, but then they affect our mindset. So I find that that mindset, that story, is really important to address because I think it's affecting us a lot.
I also wonder, there are like the words we tell ourselves, but also like going into a social situation. And maybe this is like an abstract, unspoken fear, but like, what if I'm going to be rejected? What if I don't say the right thing? Our nervous system can carry a lot of fear, reluctance, anxiety. Should we be like repeating mantras to ourselves, like this is a new experience. I've been working on this. Do some positive self-talk. What do you recommend for the sort of like not only the self-talk, but the feeling of social anxiety?
Yeah, so one of the things I've had that's working really well, I invented with one of my clients on the spectrum, and I just was like, these thoughts that you're having, just exactly what you're saying, Debbie, and they're so hard on yourself. They're so full of self-criticism. So one of my tips is count the wins as you walk into a social situation or you're in, but a win is not a huge thing. A win is I showed up. I got here. I added to a conversation. When someone has a lot of social anxiety or they're really had a tough time, I mean, that's the thing we have to remember. A lot of our kids have heard so many negative things that, it is the story in their head. So I want them to catalog those wins, and I want to catalog every small win. And I want that to become their self-talk as they enter a social situation. Now, mantras are awesome, and I have a lot about mantras in the book and on my website, but I'm having such tremendous success with catalog your wins because it is a win to just show up.
Yeah, it is. It is. And one of my mantras that really helps me is it only takes one friend to change everything. I don't have to click with everybody in this room. I'm just looking for the one needle in the haystack.
And you know what? There's research to support that. There's research that shows that if you are a bright and quirky kid and you find your niche of friends, it doesn't have to be that people think you're all that. It doesn't have to be that you mix with the popular kids. It's really that you find your people. Maybe they are, in a club with you, maybe they are a special interest of yours, that those kids were happy and well adjusted well into adulthood, and it didn't matter what other kids thought of them. And I think that's important. We're looking for somebody who can appreciate us and we can appreciate them.
Yeah, so I got this little brainstorm that after this event in the membership, we're going to do buddy matching
Oh,
because it
right.
is hard to find your people. So whether you're into Dungeons and Dragons or Magic the Gathering or anime or whatever, we're going to group kids by interest, location, age. So we talk about running experiments. That's going to be an experiment. So that'd be kind of fun. All right, you talk about the social iceberg. I love the image. This is so informative. Can you share it?
Absolutely. So this is in your Bright and Quirky workbook, and it's also in Why Will No One Play With Me. And the idea of this social iceberg came to me because we talk many times in neurodivergent communities and Bright and Quirky communities about the stuff that's invisible, that's underneath the surface. And one of the things that happens with our kiddos and teenagers is that sometimes the stuff people see, the behaviors people see, are a little bit baffling. They might talk to you every night, and I don't know if any of the kids on can resemble this remark. Every night we talk about friendship. Every night we talk about wanting friends. And then you offer to take the kids to Dave and Buster or to have somebody over, and they say no. And you, as a parent, are there saying, "This is baffling to me. We had a bunch of conversations." So I have this sort of distinction, the things below the water that are the brain-based things like executive function that drive our behavior, and then the stuff above the water, and you can see it in the workbook, and it's jokes that go too far, being a little silly, saying you want friends and then not doing anything, and stuff that maybe is like ignoring a playmate, not talking to them. And one of the things I would say is, let's go back to if they could, they would, right? And the fact is too that some people, as they mature, they get how to stop the joke from going too long or how to stop being so silly, but not everybody does. And I would also argue many, many, many people don't. And so all of these behaviors that are at the surface, they're driven by our neurology, but they can also be a little baffling, especially with our bright and quirky kids, because our bright and quirky kids are able to do extraordinary things. And people tend to say things like, "Well, why can't you do this?" And my example is always that, everybody has something they're working on, right? Everybody has something they need a little help with. And to expect everything to come easily, to me, that just seems silly. So I always push back on that with educators and with other folks and say, everybody has something that they need a lift up about. And for us, neurology happens to just drive that the social stuff is harder.
Love that you're saying this, and it just brings me back to different clients. And I had one who would be very silly on the school bus ride home. Other kids would ask him to like lick the seats or eat something that dropped off the floor. And that's what and I didn't know before I really started studying this topic that for some kids where being social doesn't come automatically, like you can buy an automatic car, you can buy a manual shift car, and some things we have to just come with our wiring, we know, and some don't, and that really goes for everybody. But if it doesn't come automatically, we need to explicitly teach certain tools, which we're going to do start tomorrow. Like, look around the school bus. Are other kids doing this? What sort of reaction are we getting? Are kids laughing with you? Are they laughing at you? There's a big onion to peel here, and that's why we're going to explicitly go through all these tools, because being social is like, you go to the gym and lift weights to get strong muscles. These tools are to build strong social muscles. So super important. And when we see a kid being super silly, maybe sillier than his same age peers, friends in his grade, we got to look at, okay, maybe there's some impulse control stuff going on. Maybe there's some lagging thinking about the situation that we're in. So we're gonna peel a big onion this week. So I'm excited about that. Now, Caroline, one of the things that you do so beautifully is you teach parents how to coach their kids in building these social muscles. And let's set that up a little and share the eight principles to helping these parents become effective coaches.
Okay, so everybody communicates with their kid. I know that. I know that you you work really hard. We all do. But I'm gonna out myself as a parent and just say, we all do stuff we don't mean to do, right? We sometimes yell. We sometimes do what I call tell, 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 where you kind of greet them at the door and tell them all the things that need to be different. And so what I'm talking about here is shifting so that we are more in coach mode. And being in coach mode is a more effective way to communicate, and there's some detachment. So we're going to use techniques so that we're able to reach our kids better, so they're able to listen better, so it's a collaborative experience. So this is in your Bright and Quirky workbook, but I'll just talk about the first one. The first one is ask, don't tell. So when anybody tells you something, and I'm sure this has never happened to any of us in our partnerships, but when people tell us things, it's much easier for us to shut down. You know, if someone says to you, you're late, you've got to learn to keep track of your stuff, you can't be this way for the rest of your life, right? It's so hard to take that in. It instantly our deflector shield comes up. But if we use open questions and we ask kids and we ask them simple questions, how come? What makes this hard? You know, what makes you say that, right? We're going to get better results because A, they're going to hear themselves talk. And there's something miraculous. When you talk and you say these things, it's almost like you float above your head and you hear yourself. And so that is much more effective. And for kids on the spectrum, I don't use as many open questions as I just use questions that are more situationally based. But I still have tremendous success with this. And then the other thing is listening and learning. This is number two. So I don't know about you all, but as a parent, many times we think we know the answer. So I'm going to tell you right now, you probably know none of the answers. Every day, kids and teenagers tell me stuff that nobody in their family knew, and that was not the reason behind things. So every time I get a phone call from a parent, they tell me, I know exactly why they won't join such and such. I know what's going on with friends. I just need you to help me, you know, help me help them. And then I talk to the kid, and the kid's like, that's not what's going on at all. So we have to sort of be open to learning things and instead of assuming we know, be in listening learning mode because there's lots for us to learn and things are also complicated. So one of the things I also want to say is that it is not the world we grew up in and friendship is not the same. So a lot of times we're giving advice and the more we listen and learn, then we hear what it's really like now, and that is important. Keeping your cool. Oh my gosh, this is like the hardest one, right? But you know, a long time ago, an expert told me you don't have to discuss something that bugs you that day. So, the baffling behavior that we talked about with the iceberg, we talk for days. We're going to have a friend over. I'm going to take you somewhere. And then when you go to enact the plan, it's shut down. And maybe you're mad about that. You've spent a lot of time. We talked about this. I thought we're going to do this. If you feel like you can't keep your cool in that moment, you don't have to talk about it right now. You can even say, I would like to wait to talk about this. Because keeping your cool and having a little bit of detachment is really key. And, you know, sometimes I have success with kids simply because I am a little calmer about it because it's not my child, right? One of the other ones, there's a skill in executive function called metacognition. Metacognition is to take a bird's eye view of the situation, to know your strengths and weaknesses, to use past history to inform your future plan. And one of the things we want to do is hold up the mirror so kids can witness things. So we talked about the story we tell ourselves, right? So if your kid tells you a story, smart kids don't have friends. I have to stay with these people, right? I have no choice. We can take a bird's eye view of that, of any social dilemma, and just ask about what's going on in the situation, what have we learned from the past, you know, what do we know about ourselves, what do we know about them? That metacognitive mirror may not result in someone saying, you know, that's it, I know, I have the answers now. But it builds the muscle and they start thinking about things. So whenever we can, we want to help them witness. And part of the open questions and part of not sort of jumping in and telling them is allowing your child to become a great problem solver because we want them to be able to solve these dilemmas.
Caroline, question that we're getting in the chat is what happens when you get, I don't know, as an answer? I have a thought on that, but do you want to go first?
Sure. One of the things I love to do in that situation is, you know, ask them if they would like me to give them some different options. And if they say yes, then I give them sort of two or three options and say, you know, is it you don't know because, you know, you don't want to talk about this? Is it you don't know because you're not sure of your friend's feelings? You know, I give them two or three things. And sometimes just having that information will make them tell me why I'm wrong or why it's not that way, and it'll get them talking. There are kids who really don't want to talk about it and say, I don't know. And so I also ask them about that. And most were more than willing to tell me, yes, it's that I don't want to talk to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the techniques I've used is raise one finger if I get it right, if I guess right. So, and let's just for a moment, what are we asking about? Are we trying to get the child's perspective on what the struggle is, or what conversation are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to like if the child is, you know, anything, I'm trying to get clarity on the situation, then I'm trying to, you know, ask them questions and they'll say, I don't know, you know, and, or if I say something, that is harder for that, they would have to give more words. Sometimes kids go to, I don't know.
Yeah, like something happened at school, or we're just trying to get our whole, like, how do you even introduce the topic of we're going to talk about tools for making friends? I mean, address, we've got some kids who are here now. Can you give us a little script like, okay, it's really important to have friends. How do you even enter that conversation?
So I wouldn't enter it head on like that. What I would do is I would first start what I call paving, and I talk about this in Why Will No One Play With Me. And I would start talking about friendship in general. And it can be you just talking about the things you're seeing in your life and the things that happen in friendship and other people's, you know, dilemmas that you're hearing about. The other thing I would do is I would do something that your child likes to do. I would build trust with them. I would have fun with them. I would not talk about it in a way where, you know, they walk through the door and we're like, okay, I heard this lady on Bright and Quirky and I want to talk about friendship now. I would do stuff with them that is, you know, more comfortable and have fun with them, and then just start talking about friendship in general.
Like,
And
give us an example.
I often have kids draw me what I call a sociogram. and show me who sits where and who does what and who's friends with who and what are these different groups like, and tell me about the different players. That doesn't make them tell me about them or their struggles. I'm getting a lay of the land, and usually it gets them talking. They love to tell me everybody else's stuff and all the things going on. The other example is like, I have heard that kids, and just say something, play video games more than they see people in person. What do you think? Like, I talk about things in general, not like, so this has long been a problem and I'm feeling like we need to work on it now. That is super threatening. I want this to not be threatening. And it also, by the way, it's like certain topics. It should just be part of what we talk about as a family. You know,
So
are
kind
we
of
being social?
conversation starters. I did not know this. We did a Screen Time Summit last spring. I did not realize that video gamers are a social clique in school. I guess I should have known that, but because I sort of went to school a really long time ago, I think we had that group. But after I learned that, I said to my kids, "Oh, you guys, there's a social group called gamers at your school." And they're like, "Oh, yeah." I'm like, "Okay, well, what are the other groups? Who's in each group? Which group do you like to hang out with? Which group do you wish you could hang out with?" And it created this really nice conversation starter. And, I think they love it when they can teach us parents about these things because I really didn't know.
Yeah, that's the other trick is like have them teach you about the tech, right? So they're much better at tech than we are usually. And I ask kids all the time, like, so I don't really like see the purpose of this. Like, tell me the purpose. If a kid is really into video games, I talk about video games. If I wanted to talk friendship with a video game kid, I would play video games with them. Because then I'm in their happy place. Crafts, another great idea. Some kids like to talk in the car because it's less, they don't have to look at me. But I really like, what are clubs like? And I would just talk about it in general, and I wouldn't launch into problem solving because now the topic is discussed. And they're not going to hear any friendship topic as, oh my gosh, here we go.
I'm going to share a regret that I have. So my kids are now 22 and almost 19. I used to say I'm not going to counsel any kids that are older than my kids because I haven't lived through that, but now I can counsel all kids. But okay, the regret I have now that I would do differently as a parent, now that I've read that Harvard study and I know how important relationships are, I used to say, okay, about after school activities, you got to get exercise, be in one thing that you get exercise. But and what I would say today is, I've read the research, I know how important relationships are. You need to participate in one club or class or group where you could potentially make a friend or be in a social environment. It could be a soccer team. It could be math club. It could be volunteering in town. I don't really care what it is. You can choose it. You can go once. If it's not for you, you can try another thing. But, as parents, we don't always know what to nudge and encourage. And now that I'm seeing making friends, just like eating vegetables, I would nudge on something I actually didn't. So research is powerful.
I think just one thing to share too with our bright and quirky kids, interest is so key. And one of the things I do a lot with kids that I think not everybody does is I use special interest as the way that they make friends. So, what is friendship? It's having shared experiences, it's getting to know someone. It's bonding. And actually, research actually shows that when you're close to someone and bonded with them as a friend, your mindsets and your brain activity kind of sync up. And so, when I'm thinking about our bright and quirky kids, I want to lean into those interests, and I want to make sure that the interests have an active, interactive, piece, right? So I love activities that have add-on stuff where, like, we go to, we all go out to dinner on Friday night after the game, or we all build sets together, that kind of stuff. Because that gives us, as we're making friends, more than just the activity to do things. But really, it needs to be interactive. And there are things that are not interactive that then have an interactive component, right? And so I also think one of the things we can do as parents is talk to other parents and find out if, what exists, what are the places that things can happen. And I also have found that many schools have an active club community, and you can propose clubs. This is something that kids resist, but it works really well, is to propose a club and put it out there. And guess what? There's other people who want to talk about what you want to talk about. I promise.
Very cool, very cool. So before we move into Q&A, I want to ask about any special considerations for autism and PDA. Many people have not heard this term PDA. It's pathological demand avoidance. It's not a diagnosis in the US. It came over from the UK, but a lot of people are using this term. I find using it almost interchangeably with ODD, oppositional defiant behavior, or just person like to the extreme not wanting to cooperate. Any special considerations that should be on our radar?
Well, I've always had kids like that that I worked with, and kids, when the pathological demand avoidance exists, I have always done something where I laid out some ground rules with them. So I listen to them in part, and sometimes we even have a code word. If things are getting too hot for them, they can say like clown and we're done, right? The other thing
Code
is,
word.
yeah.
Perfect.
And then I also want to make sure that whatever we're doing, I want to make sure that this is about what the child wants, right? What do you want out of friendship? And they might say nothing. Okay, nothing I can't accept as an answer, because we can't have no friends. We know it's bad for, it's bad for your health. But in reality, I want kids to be able to have choice. So I'm teaching you to read the room. You can read what's happening in the room, and then you can decide, I'm going to say it anyway. That's fine. That's your choice. But if we don't understand things, then we don't have choice. And so I also try to make things really fun, which is one way that I get kids to engage with me. And I think we have to have strategies that work with our kids' neurology, right? So I know that there's so much advice coming at you as parents. I know that you have neighbors and relatives and, all that kind of stuff. But when I filter for, does this work with their brain? And is this how they see the world? And is this how they think? So that's how I create strategies, because we do things differently, and that's okay.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I've gotten the question a couple times, are you asking me to not authentically be who I am? Are you asking my child to not authentically be who they are or mask? And the way I look at this is that if I'm not a good cook and I want to be, I'm going to take cooking lessons. If I will pickleball, this is my New Year's resolution. I want to become a decent pickleball player this year. I got to take lessons. I didn't come out into this world knowing how to play pickleball. And it's very similar for any lagging skill that you have, and we all have strengths and challenges. These are lessons. We're going to the gym and working on the muscles. So we're not asking anybody to change who they authentically are. And Caroline, in our interview pre-chat, you said something that I was like, mind blown. Do you remember what that is?
Yeah, I do. Actually, this came from a young person. They said, You have to connect to show your authentic self. You have to meet people. You have to connect with them. You have to help them to get to know you. And this is a person who was originally like not a fan of Caroline, you know, not a fan of any of this, and has come around. And they said this to me. They said, you know, tell people you have to connect to show them your authentic self. And I tend to tell kids too, exactly what you're saying, Debbie. And I tend to say everyone's working on something, right? And then I tend to pick a strength of them, you know, something their brain does really well, and explain, you know, not everybody does that well, right? I can't do math like you can. I can't put together a Rubik's cube like you can. I, you know, struggle with these things, so I get help for them, you know, and then you can do those things, right? And one of the other things I say that maybe will help parents is I was once at my publisher and I looked around and there were literally walls of books that had been published, and there were hundreds of self-help books. And I thought to myself, there are hundreds of self-help books published every year. Everybody is working on something different, right? There wouldn't be hundreds of these books if people didn't need help with different things. So I always say to them, this is just one aspect. You know, you may not need those hundreds of books, right? You may not need those lessons. You need a different lesson.
Fantastic, fantastic. Okay, parents, we have a prize to give away, a $25 Starbucks card. So if you can put in the chat, big juicy nugget you got from today's talk that you're walking away with, but go ahead and put that in the chat and we'll randomly pick a winner. And while you're doing that, I want to let you know how we were able to make this event so low cost. And this is my PBS style little break moment before we go to Q&A. The reason I can make it so low cost for everyone is because we have the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab membership. So today and this week, we are talking about social struggles and how to overcome them and get strengths, have belonging and happiness and long-term thriving. We also work with families on school and learning because our kids need support. We need to accelerate in their bright areas and get supports for their challenge areas in school and learning. We work with people in private school, public school, and homeschooling, kids with executive function lags, anxiety, stress, and worry, screen overuse. That is a big one, and learning differences like dyslexia and dysgraphia. And we work with the best experts in the world, like Caroline, Ross Green, Ned Hollowell, Mona Delahook, Stuart Chanker, Dan Siegel. So if this event is resonating for you and you would like comprehensive approach to all the common things I just mentioned that your child might be dealing with, go ahead and go to the link that Casey's going to put in the chat. And a couple other things to mention. Today only, we have a special bonus for you, which is $29 off of your first month of membership. It costs $67 a month, which, as you know, is not even half of a single therapy session. And many people say the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab is way better than therapy. But if you do need to be referred for local therapy, we will let you know. But it's a very, very powerful mix of support. And I'll go ahead and show you a video at the end here. But just know that the work we're doing is absolutely transformational for families. And if this sounds good, go ahead and go to that link. And the coupon code for today only is FRIEND, capital F, all caps, FRIEND for $29 off your first month. Okay, so let's scroll down through the chat and let's see here. Okay. Let's see here. Oops, what was that one? I just saw. All right. Lena said her aha moment is teens need hangouts outside of school to encourage friendships. Lena, if you can privately let Casey know your email address in case it's different than your name, we'll go ahead and get that Starbucks to you. Thank you, guys. Thanks for playing. And let's go into Q&A. And then if you want to hang around a little bit longer, I will share that member. It's video of all our IdeaLab members saying, talking about their transformation. Questions for Caroline or I? Go ahead and raise your digital hand. We'll take a few, or your human hand. It helps us if you can raise your digital hand, or if you're shy, you can also ask us in chat. Let's see. Someone asked about using like a health savings account they might have with work for the IdeaLab. You would have to check with your particular program. We take payment directly from parents, so it would be a reimbursement, but we do have families doing that, but don't know if your plan qualifies, so you need to check with your plan. Okay, Zen C, love to hear from you. And if you can come on camera, that'd be
Hi.
ideal. Yeah.
Okay, one second.
Not a requirement, but it's just nice to know who we're talking to. Okay,
I
Zen,
am
I'm going to come.
actually,
Yeah.
I am working from home and I'm kind of in my, sweatshirt and I'm not very
Hey, you look great.
presentable, so I
You look great.
apologize, but
No problem.
anyways, thank you so much, Debbie. My daughter has faced a lot of, she's twice exceptional. Both my kids are actually. I have an almost 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. They're very bright. They're a year ahead of their peers in class. My daughter's 9 in 5th grade, or my son is 8 in 3rd grade. But, obviously they're lagging in a lot of social skills because they are both ASD and ADHD. Anyways, my daughter. She has faced a lot of peer rejection when it comes to friends. Well, we live somewhere in Southern California where kids are very cliquish in this small community. They're all cliques. They only hang out with each other. The parents only hang out with each other, and people aren't being inclusive. And we moved here about 2.5 years ago. So we find that some of the cliques that have already been made, the new friends, they quickly find my daughter doesn't have the skill set to make those new friends. So by now, so late into the school year, friendships are already made. So even though she plays club lacrosse and she plays soccer now, she's in activities, she is having a hard time making friends. The friends that she's always asking to hang out with, they're in their own cliques. And so she just gets rejection after rejection after rejection daily. And because of that, she's stuck in this rut where she doesn't want to, she is mortified of asking new friends to do things outside of school.
I hear you. I hear you. So, a couple
How can I
clarifying
help her?
questions. Yeah, before Caroline answers, how old is she and what are her interests?
So she's 9, she's almost 10. She likes lacrosse. She doesn't like soccer. She only joined it because she thought she was going to hang out with a couple of kids there, a couple of girls. She's very artistic. She likes to tell stories. She likes to just hang out and be heard and talk a lot. So she was shut down by a lot of kids in that respect too. Both my kids are pretty smart. They grew up overseas. They know a lot about the world. They were five or
Awesome.
seven when we first moved
Yeah.
to the US. So a lot of these
Okay.
kids like find her really weird. Her complaint is that they find me weird because I
That's.
talk about religions and world events and people are looking at her and like, she's weird.
And you know what, Zen? This is so common with bright and quirky kids. They are not cookie cutter. I mean, this was my experience in school too. So, Caroline, how do we find at least one friend and a spare for a wonderfully quirky girl?
So there's a couple things, and I'm not going in any particular order, Zen. I've seen this a lot, so I'm very familiar with this paradigm. I want to say first, I would love to get her some skills around adapting her style sometimes and talking about what the other kids talk about, or finding people who want to talk about what she wants to talk about would be my main focus. But We are going to do lessons this week that will help you with this then. So just, stay tuned. Some of the lessons we're going to do, we definitely are skills that could help her. Because even if we find people that are our people, sometimes, and I'm totally resemble this remark, we talk, too much. Then the other thing is, I want to make sure that she's finding kids who are as smart as she is and who have similar interests. So I want to build her confidence, right? I want her to find friends at school. But the biggest thing I want is to stop this cycle of rejection and negativity. So if there are places where she can do things, where she can meet other bright, quirky kids who are wanting to talk about these things, right? That is my focus, is who are her people, what are her interests, and then how can she find those folks? And it can be in a different town, in a different setting, because I want to boost her confidence, because I hear from you her confidence is falling. What makes us feel more confident? Having some success and feeling like, hey, there are people where I can find that belonging. So that is one of
Fantastic.
my biggest things.
Oh, and
Thank you,
Carolyn, that
Caroline.
makes perfect sense. Like that. So she did find those people. Like, for example, she also likes to play with dolls still. And she found a couple of people that like to play with stuffies and dolls still. But those people, their families, are very cliquish and they only play with other kids and she's not invited anymore. Like she just got suddenly excluded. So she can't access those kids anymore. Because they're a clique of parents and kids, and everybody else is not a part of that anymore. And she kind of was before. So that shot her down. It's not even about loss of confidence. Like that completely, she's like, what did I do? What happened? Yeah, so Zen, if you have follow-up questions for Caroline, let's go ahead and put them in the Facebook group. For anyone who's not a member of the Friendship Week Facebook group yet, Casey's going to put the link in the chat here, and we could keep the conversation going. And of course, in the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab membership, we've got master's level and PhD level coaches we can help as well because as you know, these are not like 5-minute questions to solve the whole thing, but I love what you said, Caroline. I think that's a great next step. All right, I'm going to prioritize folks who are on video. So, Jennifer, love to hear from you.
Hi. I have an 8-year-old, or an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. They're both on the spectrum and have ADHD. My youngest is the one having struggling the most. She has a lot of social anxiety, and both kids are good at talking to anybody, and they make friends quickly. It's maintaining those friendships that are difficult, particularly for my daughter. She's pretty good one-on-one, but in a group setting, it's a little more complicated for her to navigate the social cues. So, what advice do you have for developing skills for maintaining friendships once they've developed them?
Oh, Jennifer, this is so in my wheelhouse because ADHD kids and I would say ASD kids too, and adults struggle to maintain friendships. So this is something that I'm super, super familiar with.
Hey, I have an idea.
One,
Do you want to bring this to show it to
Jennifer,
Nina?
I'm so, oh, let me mute. Okay.
Casey, I looked it up. Yeah.
I want to just say that we are going to do a bunch of lessons this week about social cues. So, and I have a whole track in Why Will No One Play With Me. So if you feel empowered after this week and you want to go and do those exercises with her, if she's willing, you can. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people have, it's not, it's, they're easy to follow. They're written for you. The other thing is, maintaining friendships is often for us about having sort of routines and infrastructure so that we don't have to remember and we have sort of built-in experiences where we see people. So, I want that would be good for her. A lot with certain age levels is about responding to people and keeping up with them. And in that case, again, I like to create routines around that so that, if it's texting back, she's texting back. If it's, making sure that she, talks to them during the school day so that she keeps it up, it's that. And then the other thing that you said that I thought was really, really key, Jennifer, was that she struggles with the sort of what I'm thinking is probably unstructured situations. She's better one-on-one. So we're gonna do a lesson this week called Social Spy. And one of the things I'm gonna teach you is how to help her observe and watch people and see how, these unstructured situations work. And then I would love it if you organically bring her into family situations, maybe family parties, hanging out with cousins, and she can practice being in less structure. Because what tends to happen with these kids is, as we're in the unstructured environment, things crop up. Okay, I feel bombarded. I need strategies for that. Okay, I don't know how to make chit chat. We're going to do exercises about that today. And the more that she can come up with, how does she do this unstructured thing and what strategies does she need, that will serve her for her lifetime. So I'm so
Love
excited
that.
you're here. I'm so excited
Love
you're
that.
here.
Thank you, Caroline. Awesome. Keely, you're up next.
Hi, so grateful to be here and just grateful to know that I'm not alone in this with my kids. I have a 10-year-old daughter and she's been in a very small school and it's been an ongoing problem. The story she's telling herself, I appreciated that. What are the stories we tell ourselves is that she's being excluded. And I think that that is the case to some degree. Like it's not all or nothing, but I just witnessed this morning bringing her into school and one of the students actually was hi, like in a, in a very positive, inviting way to her. And she just like shut down and was really quiet. And so, and the girl asked her a question and she, I didn't think she responded. Maybe she did quietly and I didn't hear her. And so it was interesting. Like, I don't have these opportunities to witness what's actually happening. I'm getting little glimpses. I'm getting the stories she shares where she's feeling excluded, which are heartbreaking for a parent to hear that, I have no friends. Nobody talks to me. They're going off in these. So I guess I'm curious about how to engage the school. I mean, I have to some degree. There's this other piece of kind of teasing out. I hate labels. I'm a licensed social worker as well, and I hate diagnosis. But and she hasn't been diagnosed with anything. I mean, I could diagnose her with spectrum, ADD, maybe. Maybe it's a highly sensitive person, right? So like using these labels, but really getting to the bottom line of the behavior.
Right.
And how to support that and when to engage the school. But there's so much shame. I think that's what I'm noticing right now as she's getting older. There's so much
For
shame for her to
sure.
talk about it,
Yeah, so true, Keely. So true. Caroline, thoughts?
Yeah, I have many, many thoughts. So, I would say that a lot of times we do miss bids. And overtures. And we miss those overtures that say, oh, hey, I'm interested in you. So I would love to have you, now that you have this information, and I would, by the way, say to any parent of a bright and quirky kid, information is power. Volunteer in the classroom, go into the school, join the committees, because the more you can see them and the more you have a network of support, the better off you are. Because, if another parent tells you, hey, this is going on, don't get mad at them. They're giving you priceless information. And I always try to think that they're doing it from a good place, sometimes not. The other thing is, I would love to hear, just to ask her about it. Like, I noticed this. Have you noticed this? You're going to be a total candidate for Social Spy, which we're going to do this week. Because she needs to start learning and seeing those overtures, because she's not, I genuinely believe she's not. I would also say that we're going to do Reading the Room. That would really help her. I also think, here's my only thing too. I would engage the school. I know you don't love the labels. I totally get it. The thing about those labels is they make the school listen up, and they give you power. So I would say that having the school respond and help, those labels can make them help. They should help anyway. I would definitely ask them about what they see. And I would love for her to have activities and things she's doing that help her feel really good, because it's important to feel good about yourself every day. Some I want all these kids' strengths every day.
So true, so true. Caroline, we have a bunch of questions. How are you doing for time?
I'm here for you, Debbie, as long as you want me.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. So let me take 3 minutes and share our member stories about the Idea Lab, and then we'll dive into more questions. Casey, do
Okay.
you want to share screen? Click that little button so we get the audio too. I love this video. I think you guys are gonna enjoy it. And I'm just hearing a lot of the same themes resonate in the questions, so I want to make sure you see it.
I spent a dozen years trying to figure out what to do with my kid, and basically nobody really knew. I knew I had an amazingly bright kid, and I knew there were many, many challenges.
I feel like not only did my kids not come with instruction books, but their boxes had different pieces in them.
When I came across Bright and Quirky, I didn't know what 2E was. So that was step one for us, was discovering the label for what our son was, because we knew he was smart and we knew he had challenges, but we didn't really know what that was called, and that there were other kids with the same kind of pattern of skills and challenges as he has.
I think having that different lens has really helped me to be a better mom.
Bright and Quirky was kind of like the intervention we needed, because we just didn't have the knowledge, the skills, the confidence.
There's just so much good advice. You get all your questions plus more answered.
I always have moms here that have kids just like mine, and it's normal.
Suddenly, all kinds of light bulb moments happen. I recognize so much of our son, his behaviors, his challenges, and what other people were saying.
The right message is constantly being relayed to us on a weekly basis. We can go in and take what we need at times we need it.
Such a warm and compassionate group of people. It's really nice to have people that get it and that are there for you.
It's very easy. You know, you go on your own time when you want to go in and catch up on things that are happening. The monthly interviews with various experts in the field, I think those are priceless.
It's so nice to have a group of other parents that are going through what you're going through. We're all kind of here for each other.
I wish I could go back 7 or 8 years and do everything different, and I wonder what life would be if I knew all this stuff.
I would say it's totally worth it. He is the same kid, but so much happier. You will find so many ideas on how to make your child succeed in their educational journey and in their life journey. It's been invaluable to us.
There's all these different journeys you're on, and you're moving a little bit and a little bit, and then they start supporting each other. The 1% gains, all of a sudden, you turn around and you say, my life's completely different, and it's been happening almost invisibly.
Just have to say thank you, because you were a lifeline when no one understood what I was going through. My children have blossomed.
It's way exceeded my expectations.
It's been a game changer for us.
All right. Thanks for sharing that, Casey. That's fantastic. And if you guys also have questions about the Idea Lab, definitely let us know. And we're so happy you're here so we can do more of this problem solving with you guys and support you. Okay, let's go. And Casey's putting the link in the chat. And again, our bonus just for today is $29. Just use friends in all caps. Okay, Alexander, love to hear from you.
Hi, thanks for letting me speak. So I've been reading The Secret Book to Social Rules for Asperger Kids. I wasn't sure if you're familiar with that book. With my son. My son is 9 and he's right here with me. He is ASD and ADHD, and we've been loving it, but I know it's about 12 years old at this point. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on like guides or micro skills that to teach children on social in the social realm. And we've been noticing a lot of just general issues at his school, really connecting and maintaining relationships and not causing lots of conflicts at school. So we've just been teaching him all these things and he's loving it. Just didn't know if you had any ideas on like expanding on what we're learning from that book and all that.
Wonderful. And I just want to start by saying, and Caroline, you're muted, by the way. Caroline's book is really fabulous. Why Will No One Play With Me? So all the tools we're covering this week will be super helpful. And in general, I want to say, do more of what's working. So if what you're doing is working, do more of that. And Caroline, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, Why Will No One Play With Me? And my book is set up for the parent and child to work together. That was why it was the first of its kind. It is not set up for professionals, although many professionals use it. It is meant to be for parents. So all the lessons are for you to work with your child one-on-one. And so I would say, Alex, humbly, like that can be really good for all the things you're talking about. And you just follow the lessons and do each one particular to what you want to work on, or there's an executive function questionnaire you can fill out to figure out what your child, where there are lagging skills. And I also think you have an incredible opportunity, especially since you're already going into this area, which I'm so excited about, which is you are organically with your child, every single one of you, and you are their original teacher. And I know it feels daunting sometimes, but every party you go to, every barbecue you go to, every time you're together in, you know, the commute, you have the chance to be, you know, doing some of these practicing of social skills together. Every family dinner, we're going to do an exercise, tell teletype story. We can be working on conversation skills. We can be working on how to, you know, say things in a way that, you know, sort of is beginning, middle, and end. We can be working on these things together. And that's why I personally feel like I'm not against professionals. I love professionals. I work with professionals, but they're not with you all the time, you know? And even if you have a fabulous group you're with or a fabulous professional you're working with, you're with them once a week. So I would humbly say, Alex, one of the things that you're doing fabulously is work with your child. And I would really encourage everyone to, I'm going to talk a lot this week about the organic opportunities you have. I know it's scary, but I'm going to teach you how.
Yeah. So you're in the right place. You're in the right place. Okay. Fantastic. Mary, you're up next.
Sorry. Did you say Annie?
I did.
Thank you. Hi. I'm so sorry. I didn't quite hear it. Hi. So we have, I feel like this question is really different from all the other ones. We have our 10-year-old is very bright, ADHD, and really struggles with boundaries. He does not seem to I don't know whether he can't read body language or he just doesn't respect it. But this has caused a lot of issues, both with friendships, family members. And it's also very triggering for me. As like when I was a kid, I was on the other end of that. So I struggle to handle it kind of in the most, you know, calm and loving way. So I would love any tips that you have for where I could find resources or et cetera.
Yeah. The whole space bubble thing. He just doesn't
get it. Yeah. This is very, very common, for kids with ADHD, and ASD, but I'm totally familiar with your dilemma. So a couple things. I am happy. I'm going to put my email in the chat. I'm going to put hello@CarolineMaguireAuthor.com. Because my assistant monitors that, and then she nags me if I don't get back to people, and is just a nudge. I also would say part of what goes on for us is not understanding the levels of relationship and how we act physically with those different levels of relationships. So one of the things that I love to do with kids, we're going to talk about flavors of friendship and the different friends and the different levels. I'm going to give you that tool tomorrow. But I also want, what I do is I make, you can make a poster board. I take all the different people in the kid's life and we look at who are the people we hug and, you know, space invade and whatever, and who don't we. And I know one of the little friends I did this with recently, who was about your child's age, we were talking and, you know, there's relationships that are hard, right? Sometimes when I work with kids and I'm like, what about the guy who brings Chinese food? They're like, that guy comes to the house all the time. I'm like, totally. But is he a friend? You know, and we make a chart of who we hug and who we don't and who we space invade. And there's people who are in their lives who they shouldn't, you know, space invade. And so that's part of it, is that they don't realize there's a self-reg portion, Annie, that we're going to work on also later in the week, a silly goofy scale. We're going to teach him self-regulation and you're going to walk away with amazing tools. But there's other elements to this that are about, do I understand my relationship? So email me and I'm going to send you some goodies, but, and anyone can do that. But, I also am going to tell you some of the things this week are really going to help with this and understanding our universe and who's who and when do we go into those boundaries is a huge piece of this. And some kids get it.
You're right.
And some kids don't.
Okay. And I just want to say one more thing, Annie and partner.
Peter. Yeah.
Peter.
Peter. Okay. My child at 10 was exactly at the same place.
Huh.
And I want you to know that this phrase, they would if they could, is 100% true. So the whole idea of like they're doing this on purpose, like really please see it as a skill lag. I think that's really important. So we can.
I do, because we do it so often that, I mean, it's not like he forgets. Yeah. I mean, but you know.
It's just that. Like, it's slightly different from what you were addressing, Caroline, because people are saying, please stop. I don't want that.
Right.
Stop. And he's not stopping. And
that's
like
the listening
student, and she doesn't want it. And he's like, honor. And I don't.
And Annie, let me tell you one thing about that. And then we got to move to the next person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Understood.
You know, there's the heat of the moment. And then a phrase I really like, which is strike when the iron is cold.
Yes.
So when we're not in the heat of the moment, like maybe a dinner or something, and we got to make this appropriate for a 10-year-old, but this is exactly what I did with my son. I said, buddy, there's a thing in our society, especially with you being male,
right,
which is this is like super duper duper important that no means no.
Yes.
Especially with women, but really with anyone. And I know I give you a lot of advice or share a lot of things with you, but it would mean the world to me if you, to the best of your ability, really take in this one nugget of information I'm sharing with you. It's really, really important to respect people's no. And we're going to have a little signal. It can be this, it can be this. And when I sort of get right in front of you and I do that, it means remember, no means no, or I'll even put up my hand. And I'm going to be a broken record around this because this is like one of the non-negotiables in life.
Totally.
Okay, so that's one of my nuggets for that. And more to come this week.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right. Mia, you've been waiting. How can we help? Is Mia there? Okay, let's go to Grace. Grace, are you there? Okay, let's go to
Allie. Hi, I was muted.
Oh, this is Grace. There you are. Hi.
Thanks so much for today. My question is about my 8-year-old son, who's very, very talkative and very social with adults, but tends to monologue on topics that he's fixated on and goes on and on and on. And even if the other person is trying to change the topic, he'll say, well, coming back to my topic, and he'll go back to talking about something that he's completely obsessed with that other people either don't understand or are not interested in, or we're happy to engage for a few minutes, but they're done.
Grace, we're smiling because we've both been there.
So I'm laughing because I love this kid already.
Yeah. So my question is, how do we help him recognize without downplaying what he's passionate about? Because when we try to guide it, I can see that he's starting to feel like, but why isn't everyone so in love with this particular topic?
We got it. Caroline, what do you think?
Yeah. So, Grace, in Why Will No One Play With Me, there's a couple lessons that can help with this. One is called Who Is Your Audience?
Okay.
And you can either use the graphic, or I sometimes like to tape people's faces onto large stuffed animals and have the kid talk to those stuffed animals about shifting your topic depending on who you're talking to in your audience. The other thing I love to do to develop that understanding that not everybody likes my topic is I love to have kids draw me pictures or show me and be investigators. Let's have him, we're going to learn about social spy tomorrow. Let's be a spy and find out what are the things other people are interested in. And what will happen with this is that he will start to have the realization that people have different interests.
Yeah.
That not everybody has the same interest. And one of the things I do also with kids, we're going to do this week, which is something called tell a tight story. And so once he's figured out that kids, people have different interests, is to say things in a way that's a little bit tighter. I also love to give kids time to info dump and monologue so that they have space in their day, because I feel like it's a pent up thing and they need that space.
Yes.
And if we could find him a friend who loves to talk about this stuff, then we can also coach him around, this friend wants to talk about this and you guys go to town. But, you know, to not have that space, that's not realistic. He wants to talk about it, but what we're going to teach him is not everybody has the same interests. I'm right there with you. This is something I love these kids, because I love that he said, you know, love changing the topic back to the topic. And I think there's space for that, but it's a nuanced thing that he needs to develop this understanding. Also, perspective taking questions, which we're going to work on this week, just asking him, like, what are the things other people like to talk about? And if he doesn't know, let's find out.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to take four more. Allie, Bitta, Clarissa, Janet, and Mia. Let's see. I think you said you don't have access to a microphone, so please go ahead and type your question.
Oh, Debbie, it's up. Yeah. I found it if okay. you want me to read it
Casey,
out.
Can you read it? Yeah.
Sure. Thank sure. you. So this is from Mia, and she asks, what tips do you have for younger kids? I'm finding friendship is mostly parent-led at her age, but I don't know how to organize play dates, and the few times that I have, they never wanted a repeat. We tried drop-in classes on various topics, but friendship hasn't happened, and she's not interested and doesn't want to go. Her interests are elaborate Marvel pretend play, books, and she reads books that she reads are way above her age level and math. I'm a bit lost.
Okay, and Mia, tell us what age in the chat if you can. And Caroline, isn't this so classic for gifted kids that we might need to hang out with some bright kids? We might need to hang out with people who are a bit older than us in some ways.
I think we do, but I also want to say something as a person who's dyslexic that is a good tip and that we all, you know, think about, which is that I had kids who used to read books to me that I couldn't read because I'm a dyslexic, because I was really smart, but I have a dyslexia. And the same thing happened with my daughter, by the way. She had such super smart friends and they would actually help her. So sometimes those gifts can turn into a strength. I also think, though, that she needs to have really bright kids to hang out with. Play dates are often
5-year-old, by the way.
Five, okay. That's fine. Hey, five, precocious age. Love the age. One of the things I would say about play dates, and I talk about there's just a whole, like, 3 or 4 chapters in Why Will No One Play With Me about play dates, is that for our kiddos, we have to orchestrate them in a way that works. Sometimes we have to make them short. Sometimes we have to go someplace. The temperament of the playmate is so important because if she's with other bright and quirky kids whose temperament is similar and they share interests and you pick a location and a situation, and all this is in Why Will No One Play With Me to support you, that can make it much more successful. There are also kids who you have to pick the environment really carefully because they get bored. And she's 5 and she's already so smart. My guess is she's probably bored pretty easily. The other thing is, I really feel like older kids, like Debbie said, and, you know, I laughed when you said that the Marvel play, but I'm wondering about theater because she has an imagination. Can we use that imagination and expand it to be with also what usually is a very supportive community that is all about quirks? But she's imaginative. So I'm wondering about the theater for her.
Nice. Good idea. Good idea, Caroline. You guys, I just realized that our members are meeting at 11:30 Seattle time, which it now is. When you become a Bright and Quirky member, after we do the session every day, we're doing a session for members only to continue this discussion. Now, I did say, Allie, Bitta, Clarissa, and Janet, we were going to ask your questions. So I'm going to invite you over to that member coffee. Casey, if you could private message them the link. I know we need to. Casey's so wonderful. I put her on the spot like
Thank
this,
you,
but
Casey.
She works miracles. She works miracles. And I can answer your questions, or Caroline, if you want to keep going with us, you're welcome to whatever.
I'm totally fine to come over to the member chat and spend a little time answering questions if you send me the link, Casey. Sorry,
thank
Casey.
You. Thank you. All right. Everyone else, we will see you tomorrow when we talk about part one of the toolkit. We'll be meeting at the same bat time, same bat channel. You can use the same Zoom link. And we can't wait to keep the conversation going. So thank you so much, everybody. And Casey, just let me know when those Zoom links have come in the chat. And if you miss them, those few people, go ahead and you can email Casey at support@brightandquirky.com. And anyone else, we'd love you to become a member and join us in these chats at brightandquirky.com / friendship dash week dash TY. Make an easier link too. All right. Casey, are we ready?
I'm ready whenever you are. And everybody, please, you know, I'm so excited to see you. Bring your questions tomorrow too.
All right, I got the thumbs up. All right, guys, take care. We'll see you soon.